Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The latest front in the battle over police reform is Twitter. The parties involved, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Andrea Campbell. The exchange began after the Boston Herald reported that Campbell was holding up $1.2 million in police funds. In response to the story, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association tweeted they were astonished, quote, given the recent explosion of violence in our city, end quote. Campbell responded that she was still waiting to hear from the BPPA, quote, on why they enabled and elevated an accused child molester, end quote, referring to the former president of the union, Patrick Rose, who has been charged with molesting multiple children. In response, the BPPA replied, quote, people who live in glass houses, end quote, should refrain from talking about, quote, enabling criminals. Now, this was widely seen as a veiled reference to Campbell's brother, Alvin R. Campbell Jr., who has been charged with multiple accounts of sexual assault. A number of elected officials have expressed outrage over the Boston Police Patrolmen Association's attack. We reached out several times to them to comment or join us on the show, but they did not respond. Councillor Campbell, however, joined us earlier today to give us her take on the incident, and she began by recalling how she first reacted.
I think I continued doing the work, right? There's still a lot more work to do to ensure our police department is the most transparent, diverse, and accountable in the country. And for me, it's always been about focusing on the work and getting things done on behalf of the residents we have the honor and privilege of serving. I was disappointed, of course, that they would go personal and be unprofessional, but I don't let it get distract me from doing what's necessary in terms of the work.
There was a strong reaction, and a number of public officials, including several women of color, have condemned the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association for that tweet and for other tweets. That includes Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey, who is your competitor in the mayoral race. They pointed to the personal nature, which you just referred to, of the attack and suggested that it follows a pattern from the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association directed at elected women of color. How do you see it?
I agree. You know, the attack was definitely personal and unprofessional, but sadly, it wasn't shocking because it is a pattern from this particular union to come out with direct attacks directed towards women and electeds of color, particularly when we disagree. And for me, it's really important in this moment in time that I keep to the issues and that there is tremendous work to do to ensure our department continues to be transparent and more accountable, which right now that's not the case. And there are so many examples, whether it's the Patrick Rose case, whether or not an officer participated in the Capitol insurrection, this recent officer, McHale, who of course was caught on body camera bragging about running over protesters who now possibly has some sexual allegations against him. There are a whole host of examples as to why it is critically important that none of us, including residents, take our eye off the work of ensuring that this department does better in terms of transparency and accountability. And that's my job, and that's what I'll continue to focus on.
Do you see tweets like these as part of the larger reform picture?
Absolutely. If anything, I think this bargaining unit continues to lose credibility with the public and with many officers. You know, at what point do the rank and file members stand up and say that the leadership no longer reflects their values? And I also think about all the hardworking city employees across every department in the city who see this and have concerns as well. And so I think for me, the reforms continue to be about transparency, accountability, ensuring that we also have a department that is diverse. I've been pushing for years for more women and people of color to join our department, to be promoted in the ranks, and that our department also takes the lead on rooting out racial injustices and racial disparities in our policing model. All of that work is important, but it cannot happen if we refuse to challenge this union in particular, and the leadership of this union that would continue to go there in terms of personal attacks.
Have you heard anything from the rank and file about this particular exchange?
Folks have reached out, a whole range of folks, and left messages, frankly, words of encouragement to keep going. And I've told them I'm not going to get distracted because there is incredible work to do. Not only in terms of policing reform, but responding to issues of COVID, dealing with the opioid crisis in the city of Boston, which frankly is getting worse, including at Mass and Cass and some of our downtown neighborhoods, our Boston Public Schools. This is not the time to be distracted. And I'm one who's always worked in such a way that I have the ability to focus on the work and to continue to move the work forward.
I want to engage with you more on the policy. Before we do, I have one last question for you about this exchange. What about those who argue that fair is fair in this exchange? You took a shot at the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association about the Patrick Rose case, and then they took a shot back at you. What is your response to that argument?
I kept it about the issues. And the issue was the Patrick Rose case, which is a horrific case where we have a former officer who, based on certain accounts, committed child molestation and was allowed to stay in our police department for decades, was allowed to engage with children, was allowed to move up in the ranks and become the leader of the patrolmen's union. They were nowhere to be found in terms of a response calling out how horrendous and horrific that case was. And I was calling that out. They're a major stakeholder. They're a bargaining unit with the city of Boston. And they were absolutely silent on the Patrick Rose case. I kept it about the issues. It is unfortunate that there are some hateful individuals, including whoever wrote that tweet, that want to try to use my pain and trauma as a weapon against me. Because I've always made it clear that this work of being a public servant has always been about breaking cycles of poverty, criminalization, and trauma, not just for my family, but for many others in the city of Boston. And I know there are many residents in our city that can relate to the stigma and the shame that comes when you have a family member that is incarcerated. And I have always been open about those experiences and how that pushes me to turn pain into purpose.
What do you want from the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association about the Patrick Rose case? What information or statement or documents do you want from the BPPA?
In addition to calling it out as the horrific case it is, them to be more transparent about the role of the union and his leadership in the union during this time, who was engaging with him, do they have any knowledge of what was going on? In addition, I want the union to also be pushing for accountability. I have been public talking about the need for an external investigation here. They can be doing the same to push for that accountability that every resident in the city of Boston deserves with respect to this case. And I'm calling for an external investigation that would involve the U.S. Attorney's Office. Others can be calling for the same. And I think it's critically important given the magnitude and the seriousness of this case and the ramifications.
All right, so let's back up. Before the exchange turned personal, it began with the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association raising questions about police funding. The Boston Herald reported about the City Council, a committee under your leadership, slowing down $1.2 million in funding. That's the City Council's Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice. Did you slow down that $1.2 million in funding? And if so, why?
I have no problem releasing grants out of my committee to our department. Just this past Wednesday, I did just that. I released a grant that we received in order to serve a certain purpose in the department where I got adequate information about how those monies would be used. These two particular grants, and it is rare that I have kept grants under review for a period of time, but these two particular grants are troubling. They point to racial disparities within the BRIC, the gang database. Residents, advocates showed up at the hearing to bring forth information about some concerning patterns with respect to practices within the BRIC that are leading to some of these racial disparities and surveillance. And so I have asked a lot of questions, and I'm still waiting on the department to respond with meaningful information with respect to these grants. And I've yet to get that. And I'm going to keep pushing them. That's why they're under review. But I'm also pushing back on this narrative. The police department has a budget that is over $400 million and a ballooning overtime budget that is $70 million in rising. It is not sustainable. And it's definitely not sustainable coming out of COVID when we have to be conservative in our budgeting. And so I push back on this narrative that to respond to incidents of violence in the city of Boston, we have to keep giving millions of dollars to an overtime budget. That is not the case. I'm actually the only candidate with a plan that would not only reallocate money from that ballooning overtime budget, but would redirect it so that every district and every neighborhood has adequate coverage for officers to be able to respond to what the calls are that they're receiving, and at the same time address the root causes of violence which also has to happen at the same time because police alone cannot solve issues of violence by themselves in the city of Boston.
So staying with this for a minute longer for our listeners, the $1.2 million in question, it was $850,000 to, you said, the BRIC, that stands for the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, the gang database is what it's often known as. The other was $300,000 to fund a partnership between the Boston Police Department's Youth Violence Strike Force and the State Police Gang Unit. Are you fundamentally calling into question these programs, and is that... what could you hear that would change your mind and release the funding to these two programs? Or is there something fundamental to which you object?
All of us agree, including our former mayor and the administration and folks at the BRIC as well and the department, that there are racial disparities in our policing and including in the BRIC, in the gang database, in the gang unit. And there have been residents, lawyers, many advocates, so many folks who have shown up with specific examples that highlight those inequities. What I want to see from this department is a willingness not only to acknowledge they exist, but to put forth a plan and a strategy to eliminate and eradicate those racial inequities, to create a department that is more transparent and accountable and diverse, and a department that is frankly the leading department in this nation when it comes to transparency and accountability. That's what I want for our city. And that's what I'm gonna keep pushing for as chair of public safety. And that's exactly what I would push for as the mayor of the city of Boston.
So my last question to you, Councillor, tries to look at the complexity of this particular situation. You are running for mayor. You have been open, as you said to me just a few minutes ago, about both your view that the system has failed your brothers and also the personal nature of your family's relationship with the criminal justice system, losing Andre at age 29, the accusations against Alvin, who is accused of assaulting women, and you speaking out for women who made those accusations. Now this exchange with the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, who, if you were mayor, you would be in negotiations with, as you note, in future labor contracts. How does one navigate the complexity of that situation in this moment?
I frankly have been navigating it for years. I started on the council as the chair of the Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice, pushing for the implementation, for example, of body cameras after the city agreed to implement that program. Pushing for, of course, the Civilian Review Board, pushing for greater diversity. It has not been easy along the way. There have been different attacks here and there that weren't maybe so public. But for me, I do not allow that to stand in the way of the work I feel called to do in this moment, which it goes back to my personal story of having such incredible loss, losing my parents, brothers, siblings, cousins to the criminal justice system. In saying that, my life story itself is an example of how we can break cycles of poverty, criminalization, and trauma in the city of Boston. I got everything it would take to do that from this city that I love. And now my job is to make sure that every family in the city of Boston has access to the same opportunity to be able to break those cycles for their families. And each of us has a role to play in making that happen.
That is City Councilor and Boston mayoral candidate Andrea Campbell. Councilor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.